The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'm Brian.
I'm Rodrigo.
I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and we will go into detail about the topics we discuss, so if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
And in this episode, toys!
Yay!
Jenna Jameson! Well, her Shadowhunter book. The Escapists. And we ask the question, who would win in a fight, Spider-Man or Batman?
And I want to thank everyone for coming back for not yet another week of Major Spoilers fun. I'm really pleased we kind of released last week's episode kind of under the radar, and we had a lot of people surprisingly find the episode and listen to it. In fact, we've had a couple of great reviews.
That's right. We had some comments on iTunes, is right?
Yep, two five-star reviews up on iTunes.
And this is what they had to say. These guys have it all down. A professional format, great topics and opinions that aren't just lip service. The three-person format works great, and the diverse speakers make sure that everyone from the neophyte to the seasoned veteran will enjoy it. Did I say that right?
Yes, seasoned is the correct.
Seasoned, all right. I highly recommend this podcast for anyone who wants a real opinion about comics, not just the same old company line you get from some podcasts. Thanks, Mom.
Yes. And then, of course, Stacy B, he's always there with a comment. We always enjoy comments from Stacy. Over at the Major Spoilers Forum, he said, there are a few surprises here and there and some great commentary. The production value is pretty high, especially compared to some of the others out there. I think there's a good balance regarding the makeup of the three hosts of the panel, and I enjoyed listening to it. It did ramble a little towards the end during the Batman actor discussion. Maybe we don't like Stacy that much. But the rest is paced very nicely. Great job. Ookla the Mock was an excellent choice for the bumper theme music. I listened to it with my wife in the car, and her only complaint was that now she can't get the Teen Titans Go theme out of her head.
Yeah, but it's a good theme.
Yep, and if you have some comments, suggestions for the show, or just some general feedback, feel free to head over to the Major Spoilers Forum, and you're going to find a link to that at majorspoilers.com. Why don't we go ahead and get into some of the top stories of the week, and the biggest thing is the Toy Fair that's going on in New York City. It's going on the 17th through the 20th, so depending on when you listen to the show, it will just about be getting over or will be completely finished. And I got to tell you guys, I like toys a lot, especially now with a new kid in the house. I have a reason to go out and buy all the toys. I keep telling my wife, no, these are for the son. But what did you guys see that really stood out for you, Rodrigo?
What I thought was interesting, I saw some of the new Hulk stuff that's coming out.
Oh, yeah?
And it's interesting that they're kind of going sort of all ages with the Hulk stuff. There's like a cute little Hulk.
Yeah, the Rock'em Sock'em Hulk or whatever.
Yeah, kind of Rock'em Sock'em. And the Hulk hands, which I thought was a little...
Ooh, I love Hulk hands.
Yeah, but it's like when they originally launched them, I think for the first...
Right, for the first movie.
For the Eric Bana Hulk movie.
Yeah.
Is he going to be in the next one?
No.
Okay. So we'll refer to that as the Eric Bana Hulk movie.
The Hulk movie that shall not be named.
Right.
It was good. It was good.
Brian liked it. But the Hulk hands were just kind of very straightforward. These new Hulk hands that they're launching are like shaded. They're shaded.
Yeah.
Like they're like hyper realistic, and I think they look a little weird. Not that I think a kid who's like bopping his sister in the head with them is going to care, but that's just something that caught my eye. And not that it's necessarily comics related, but I thought the figure of the Cloverfield monster was cool.
Yeah.
But that's just because I think the Cloverfield monster is cool.
Well, what I liked about that Cloverfield monster was that in the movie, you hardly ever get really a good look at the monster, yet here, you get to see it from all the different angles, and it kind of in itself is a spoiler if you kind of want to leave it up to your imagination of what that monster is.
Yeah, so avoid that, and we've already spoiled for you, if you haven't seen it, that there's a monster in Cloverfield.
Oh,
there
really? Oh, sorry, Brian, for those of you that don't get to go to the movies much.
Yeah.
Did you see anything that stood out? My favorite was the ones that you're looking at on the website right now, the New God action figures from DC Direct. Oh, I just hope that all of these figures that they create are in the same scale as
The JLU?
Yes. Well, not they won't be that. They're a little bit bigger than that. I think these are like 5 or 6 inch figures. They're really well articulated. They got multiple points of articulation. In this first wave of New Gods, they've got Lightwave, Mr. Miracle, of course, Darkseid, who's one of my favorites, and Orion, which will make pretty good companions with the DC, what is it called, early edition, first edition. I forget what that other collection is that work out pretty well, too. So I'm looking forward to that. And, of course, there's a lot of Indiana Jones stuff that they showed at the show. It seems like every company has some kind of Indiana Jones tie-in. But my favorite is still going to have to be, beyond the DC New Gods line, are the Mini-Mates and the Legos. For some reason, I've been a Lego fan for years, and the fact that we're getting playsets based on Indiana Jones, new Batman stuff, including the Harley Quinn figure.
Speed Racer.
Yes, Speed Racer is another one coming out. I saw those playsets today. They look awesome.
Now, do these sell really well, though? I'm just wondering.
Well, it depends on where you're at. I think they sell really well. I like the Mini-Mate figures better than the Lego minifigs, especially the Batman figure, because if you take off the head, the way that the plastic, how thick it is on the Lego figures, in order to get the white eyes, they actually had to paint on the right above the regular eyes of the figure, they had to paint this big white stripe so that when it goes on, it makes the eyes white. That's the only thing I don't like about it, and the cape is a little awkward. But certainly what Mini-Mates do is, they've got, on the Marvel side, at least 20 different series, 20 yeah. different waves, and they're up to wave 8 or 9 now on the DC figures. Not to discount the Battlestar Galactica, the Deep Space Nine, the myriad of Star Trek Mini-Mates that are coming out. There's a lot of stuff.
Although I do think that largely the Mini-Mates stuff is it's meant to be collectible rather mm-hmm. than the Lego stuff, which I think is a little bit – because the Mini-Mates, they're easy to take apart.
Yes, very easy to take apart.
If you have kids, get them Lego Batman. If you want Mini-Mates for yourself, get yourself, you know.
The one thing that I wish Art Asylum would do was several years ago, before they started doing the DC characters, they had a line called the C3 line, and that they actually had playsets. They actually had a Batcave, a plane, a bunch of vehicles and sets that you could actually play with. And that was made by the same company. It's the same Mini-Mates, essentially.
Oh, that's cool.
But I wish they would do that more so we had sets to play with. And I've never really tried them with the Legos to see if they were exactly mm-hmm. compatible, but that's where we're at. Brian, what about you? Anything pop out and stand out to you?
Well, I'm just kind of looking around it right now, and it's got an Indiana Jones, and this is obviously a Raiders of the Lost Ark. I don't know if this is a new item? It's probably
That's a new item. In fact, I don't know if it's Lucas who's looking for more money or what the deal is, but they've got certainly every Raiders of the Lost Ark thing that's coming out. They're trying to capitalize on that. And, of course, what you're looking at is, I think, the Sideshow Collectibles 12-inch figure, cloth figure.
Yep.
It looks stunning.
Yeah,
except
really
the eyes look a little creepy. If you look close at the eyes, they look like he's staring at you like, I'm going to kill you.
Well, and it's actually a really good likeness of Harrison Ford, although at this point it's starting to look like Shia LaBeouf a little bit.
No!
Are they going to actually...
No, LaBeouf.
LaBeouf. Are they going to do a series with him, do you think? Because, I mean...
I hope not.
Because before River Phoenix passed away... Were they setting him up to be young Indiana Jones?
I don't think so.
I
think that was just for the flashback.
Okay.
Because, you had the TV series that actually had two versions of the young Indiana Jones. So cool. Anything else that strikes your fancy there on toys this week, Brian?
No, not really. I didn't get a chance to look at a lot of stuff there, so...
But you did have a favorite. For those of you who haven't been over to the website, day of launch, I had this story percolating for probably a month when I first came across it. It's these Justice League figures. One of the great things, if you can't find the figure that you want, there's probably someone out there who's going to be able to mod the figure for you. And this guy over at the Siloff's Workshop, his name's Siloff, and he went through and created some very cool Gotham by Gaslight based Justice League figures.
Yeah, and this is not something I was really familiar with going into it, but I was over at the website looking at stuff. And I just, we've talked about this before, I like reimagining of old designs, and I just think this stuff is really cool. Went over and got the screensaver.
Yep, the wallpaper.
The desktop wallpaper for it. It's just a really neat idea. If you look at it, if you go over to the website at majorspoilers.com, if you go to the archives, 2727. HTM.htm is where you're going to find the article. And it does have a link to their website.
Yep.
And what's interesting, too, is that he's got a breakdown of why he did what he did to each of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a really neat idea with the Flash. He talks about the fact that he wanted him to have kind of a pilot motif, and he's got goggles. He's got a great leather-looking outfit with the flap that comes across.
Right.
Everything looks, you know, stitched. It's got a really good look. I would be interested in seeing something like this.
I'd buy the whole set.
Yeah. This is just really cool. The Superman is a great reimagining of the idea. It's a really nice thing, and he fabricated all this stuff, right?
Most of it. I mean, if you look, some of these are actually based on other figures. Obviously, the Gotham by Gaslight Batman figure's already been out. He did some slight modifications to that. Other stuff are other figures that he's molded. I don't think that he's actually went in and actually molded a whole new character from the ground up, although some of it is actually pretty cool. I think my favorite of the series, that of course is the whole Justice League, is Green Lantern with the mutton chops on the side and that green ring and the glasses, I think looks really cool. But I'm partial to the Flash with his cool boots because, you know, if you run fast, you're going to want something that's going to wear very heavily. So he's got these minor boot things on. And then you got to love Aquaman because here's a guy that's from underwater. And in order to be up on land, it's kind of like SpongeBob SquarePants, where he's got to wear a suit that's filled with water so he can breathe.
Well, and he's got like green hair, at least in the picture. It looks like it's all green and wild and crazy. The wings on Hot Girl, mechanical wings.
Yeah.
That took a lot of work, but it's all of it is really cool. One of the elements I like, for some reason, I like goggles. I think goggles would make a great mask if it was in the real world. They would serve a good purpose. And three of the characters, Hot Girl, Flash, and Green Lantern, are sporting goggles.
Yep.
So I think that's really cool.
Yep. Any thoughts there, Rodrigo? Nod your head. Yes? No?
Yeah. Maybe? For those of you who can't see us, I'm nodding my head. No, I like them. I like all of them a lot. I think, you know, Wonder Woman is a great take.
She looks like a dominatrix a little.
I guess so, but that's what it looked like back then, you know, high cleavage and no ankles because ankles are dirty. and I really like there's, you know, that whole steampunk genre, which I think was very well captured really between Hot Girl and Aquaman, I think.
Yeah, I love that whole series too. And again, listeners, you can go up there. You can head over to the Syloff's workshop from the link on the Major Spoilers page. He actually built a wallpaper for people to download because I had sent him an email asking, hey, do you got a wallpaper of this? And he sent one out and said, please come over to the website. Anyone can download. So we've got that out of the way. Now, before we get too far into the show, why don't we go ahead and jump down to our first review this week. This week we are... It's coming out just this week, so depending on, again, when you're listening, we're going to take a look at Jenna Jameson's Shadowhunter from Virgin Comics, and here's how Virgin Comics describes the issue. From the mind of Jenna Jameson, the New York Times bestselling author and icon-centric-tainer, is that what it is? Iconocentritainer, porn star, and written by Christina Z of Witchblade fame, comes a dark tale of one woman's struggle from forces beyond ordinary perception. A young orphan, beautiful woman attempts to make a life for herself in the big city as she grapples with mundane problems like making rent and a creepy manager at work. Something deeper brews, a nagging suspicion that her life is not her own. Seeking answers, not to mention extra cash, she rolls in a past life regression experiment which seems to ignite visions of a demonic past that no one can explain. Now, again, I did say that this came out or comes out this week, January or February 20th, is when it hits the stores. We got an advanced preview from Virgin, and, you know, unlike other podcasts, not everything that we're going to be talking about are great comics or high on our list of super good things. So why don't we, who should we start off with first? Rodrigo, we haven't heard from you a lot this evening.
All right. Well, I was genuinely scared when I was reading this book.
Why?
Well, I rolled my eyes so hard that they got stuck on the back of my head. So I had to go to the emergency. The art was good. The art was good.
Yeah, the art was really good.
There was nothing else that was good about it. It was poorly paced. It was poorly written. The dialogue was awful. It wasn't even sexy, you know, because you do it, you know, they emphasize the fact in the press releases that it's not going to be porn.
Right.
But it's not even, you know, just even remotely attractive. Although, again, the art was cool. I don't know. I just, I, if we hadn't been reviewing it, I probably would not have read it all the way through.
Right. I think I would have picked it up on the newsstand simply because of the cover, which does feature a likeness of Jenna Jameson done by Greg Horn, who I think does a really good job of capturing people's likenesses. And if you guys have seen the latest Witchblade cover that he's going to be doing, looks really great. Now, on the other hand, what's surprising about this series as far as art goes, Greg Land, who everyone knows as copying images directly from porn movies into the comics, is not somebody that actually worked on this title. Instead, the artist is Mukesh Singh, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly. I thought the art was very good. I think that's the one saving thing for this issue. Like I said, I probably would have bought it on the newsstand just for the stunning cover alone, which looks really good. But you're right. I would agree with you totally that there's some bad pacing in this issue. Let's take, for example, on page 19, the doctor is conducting a test. She's going in to find out why she's seeing things. Even from a young age, she's been seeing all these things that they first start out as little child drawings, and then as she gets older, they start to look like little cherubs. And then as she goes in for these experiments, they turn into these demon-looking things, and she starts seeing things and questions her sanity. So she goes back to the doctor again. And here's how it kind of works out. Page 19, the doctor is conducting a test. In panel 2, he's commenting how the supernatural readings match subject.
Yeah, is it a she? Actually a woman, which is weird. Whoops. I didn't catch that until that page when I noticed she was wearing earrings.
Oh, well, see,
later
there you
on,
go.
They referred to him as a she. So maybe the art is not as good as we were saying.
Well, anyway, the doctor's and she states that the supernatural reading she's getting off of, what's this girl's name, Jazzercise? It was a little hard to pronounce.
It sounds like a porn star name, honestly.
Yeah. Okay, so these readings match the subjects of Area 51, the Omegas, and archives from the Great Tomb of Lilith. I'll be contacting the High Order following the test. And then in the very next panel, all of a sudden, all hell starts to break loose. And instead of kind of leading us up to building, like seeing cracks in reality or whatever's going on, suddenly the doctor starts screaming out and pressing the button saying, the patient is undergoing the grand mal soul split. Everyone evacuate. That's a one-panel transition.
Yeah.
And the whole issue felt rushed like that.
No, that I've got that written in my notes as one of the funniest lines I've ever heard. I've got it written out. Emergency evacuation, ! Patient undergoing grand mal soul split. I'm like, is this a band that I missed someplace?
It must be. But, you know, I also thought that there were some good lines in this piece. So essentially what's happening is that Jazzercise has gone to New York. She's kind of a wannabe tattoo artist. Her boyfriend is just using her, apparently. There's some hints that that she's bisexual. She's got some daddy issues, and she sees all these imaginary creatures. And so, you know, her landlord is nice enough to point out that, hey, your boyfriend's cheating on you. She has no money. Her phone doesn't work. That's when she goes in to do the experiments. Then the wall breaks down between the barriers, and these shadow demons start coming out from everywhere, which I thought looked kind of cool, if not a little gross.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
And then there's some handsome stranger that comes to fight at her side out of nowhere. Yeah. Again, this character pops out of nowhere. They start fighting with one another. And she has, when she starts to do this change from her normal Jazzercise appearance, she gets this dark hair and this shadow sword comes out of her arm. To me, it just seems like a really bad ripoff of Witchblade, which is unfortunate for Christina Z, who created Witchblade. But check out this great line. She's slashing away at all these demons. This is before the wall came down and everyone can see. Mm-hmm. And she's covered in...
Which wasn't really touched on.
Yeah.
It was just bam.
Yeah, and she's covered in blood, lying on the side of the building, and she's got this this great line that says, considering the state I was in, I figured the best thing to do was go home. Even your average New Yorker will notice a woman covered in blood eventually.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think fans of Jenna Jameson are going to be disappointed. Her likeness doesn't appear in the issue. She's not the Jezzery character. She only on the covers. Obviously, as you pointed out, Rodrigo, no nudity, no sex in the issue. Although with the hint of bisexuality, I think there might be some love interest stuff that comes up later on where this handsome stranger that's fighting along her side and probably some female companion at some point, there could be an interesting love triangle from that. The writing is there. It's just, it feels rushed. The pacing is bad.
Yeah. Oh, Okay, my notes on this. The first thought that this is porn for teenage boys, basically.
Well, that's what Witchblade is.
Well, and the thing is, we were talking about this. Is this a this is the first issue. Is Virgin a relatively new comic book company?
Yeah, it's a new comic book company. They launched, I want to say 2 years ago. At first, they really wanted to look at taking tales from India and some of the myths from India and telling them in stories of ways that maybe modern audiences could understand. So that's where we get Devi. I know Nick Cage and his son have created a title for Virgin Comics, and they're really on board. Now, I have read some of Virgin's other titles. One of their biggest ones is written by Garth Ennis. It's the reintroduction of Dan Dare, which is a popular English sci-fi character, almost our equivalent of Buck Rogers. And I read the first issue a couple of weeks ago, and it's actually really, really good. And so I appreciate what Virgin's trying to do, but this seems like a really bad attempt at recreating Witchblade.
Well, what I think is going on here, Virgin's a new company. We put something on the shelf. We put something with Jenna Jameson's name on it on the shelf. You're going to get people taking it down, and if only they go through the ads while they're reading this book, which is not very well done, we have made a marketing splash.
Right.
We want people to look at this because, man, reading this thing, I didn't know. You know, I felt bad getting into it. I'm like, am I supposed to be liking this or not?
Yeah.
I didn't know how to take it. I didn't know if this was some kind of a joke, frankly, because it just wasn't very good. It's trying to be really smart.
Right.
And it's falling really short. It's using a lot of big words, a lot of complicated concepts, and none of it makes sense. My feeling is the narration and the dialogue really seem out of place at times.
Yes.
There's a panel on page 8, and I don't know if I can get to it, but the character is, something's happening to her, and then she looks and sees herself and she
The sword, reflection of the sword.
And then she picks up the sword again and goes, I guess not, or something like that. And it really seemed that the panels were kind of out of order in how she would come to that realization. And some of, like I said, some of her dialogue doesn't make sense at where it comes. It seems to really be trying to convey something, but it doesn't make sense.
Well, and we're not going to give away the big spoiler at the end. Apparently, she comes face to face with the big bad of the issue. And I think that's one of the things that I had the biggest problem with, is that all of a sudden she's confronted with kind of the answer to everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, the big reveal of who she is and what she is revealed in the final page of the issue, and it's like, okay, where do we go from here?
Well, and that's one of the things that struck me too, and I had this same feeling watching The Bionic Woman when it first launched. It seems like new sci-fi,
which now got canceled.
Yeah, well, it seems like new sci-fi, and this has been the norm for the industry for a long time. Everything comes out. The first episode of Bionic Woman was like, bam, everything happened.
Right.
There was no suspense. There was no time for any real person to have dealt with any of that kind of stuff. This, the same way, bam, 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 things are happening. The character has no time to reflect or anything like that. So it's just, it's really compressed and really is pushed on. It just seems like a real artificial pace. But my favorite is that when she gets her power, apparently she turns into the lead singer of Heart. I looked at that and I'm like, that's exactly what that woman looks like.
You're right.
It's
looking
amazing
at the page right now. What I just passed the page.
All I could think of was Barracuda. Well, and I thought the street scenes too looked like Blade Runner.
Yeah,
lots of bright colors. People are wearing really high collared outfits and stuff, and so there was just a lot of weird stuff going on. And I do like your reference to her cheating boyfriend, what she doesn't know about. So she walks in on him at this bar, but he must have seen her coming because he had a speech all ready for her.
Yeah. Well, and the fact was that just a few panels before, and this is the jumpiness of the story and pacing, just a few panels before, she's in her apartment and the landlord is like, Jazzercise, I need to explain something to you. Your boyfriend's not any good.
Yeah.
And so they're standing in the hallway of the apartment. The next thing, they're in this club. And there's no indication
come with
me. You
know what I thought? I thought this was what the lobby of her apartment looked like. Seriously.
All the neon lights and big stars hanging around.
Yeah.
She just, the character at all does not seem at all impacted about the weirdness that's going on. There is no, I mean, there's this allusion to the fact that I've seen this since I was a kid.
Right.
But then she says it's taken on a new form. It's more solid now. But there's, you know, there is absolutely no awe. There's absolutely no disbelief of right. what's going on.
In the first couple pages, I was really liking that. It's like, oh, look, here are these little drawings, and I liked how, in her mind, she's interpreting these visions.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, even when she first goes to the doctor, she's seeing these visions as these little angel cherub things. And it's not until the doctor gives her this angel figurine or whatever it was that all of a sudden everything turns demonic. And I don't know if that's the switch that does it.
Yeah, or if it's the equipment that does it.
The equipment that's doing it. It just seems like very, yeah. very confused. So, and we don't want to give away the issue. But you're right, Brian. There are a couple of good ads in this first issue that people might want to check out. Dan Dare really got me interested. This Megas preview comic. It's kind of like a take on what if kind of storyline. Yeah. I thought looked pretty good, but
I think it's marketing. I mean, Jenna Jameson could put her name on something. She's going to get paid for it. Virgin's going to get paid for it. And I really feel, and I haven't read Witchblade, but I hear, you know, this is from the creator of Witchblade, which I know people do like. And I read this and I'm like, it seems like maybe somebody said, look, the character's got to be like this and it's got to say this and it's got to have this attitude. And it just seems like a series of bullet points. Nothing seems connected.
Right.
And I think the writer wrote it. She's going to get paid. This is going to be canceled in 3 issues. And
you think?
Well, I don't know. I don't know the average comic reader. I would not pick the. I would be so mad if I paid for this.
Okay.
It didn't make any sense.
Well, and there's stuff that's pet projects but this comic book, I don't see it lasting. It might get revived later and then canceled again, then revived later, like Dark Child,
for example. Yeah,
which
yeah.
is another,
that's another good example. This is, a lot
it's
of
It's like
that
Dark Child.
Too.
I have, I picked up this book for the art called Wraithborn.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing. Mm. You know, cute girl. All of a sudden finds herself surrounded by scary demons, manifests this blade-like power, has this transformation, and becomes a total badass who does not wear any pants.
Or underwear, apparently, in some shots. So let's give some reviews. Shall we give a 5-star rating on this, Rodrigo?
No, I would say no. It would it gets a 1-star rating for me. I would not. The only way I would have paid for this is if I had accidentally puked onto it, and then I would have felt obligated to pay for it at the comic book store. And that's just the story. The art is good, so maybe 1.5 for the art.
Okay, yeah. Brian.
But see, and we, you know, my thing is how good or how bad does the art have to be? I think the art really helps the story, but I've seen very simplistic art. I think it's all story. Everything, you know, the comic books build around story. My only thing here is people have loaned me books and I've read stuff. I already know what's at the top of my list. Now you have given me something that represents the bottom of the list. And I think that's what this is. I do agree. I mean, it's well drawn, but it was maddening to me. What was going on?
Yeah.
And they chopped down trees to make this thing. That's the other thing.
How many stars?
Oh, none.
None? Okay. I'm going to be a little nicer. I actually gave it 2.5 stars. Again, the saving grace is the art, but now that I find out that the doctor is actually a female, then, you know, maybe I have to knock that down to 2 stars instead of 2.5.
You can give it a 0.5 star for Grand Mall Soul Split. Which will be a band coming to a city.
Hello,
near
St.
Here.
Louis. We're Grand Mall Soul Split.
Are you ready to rock
fronted,
and roll?
Fronted by the former lead singer of Heart.
Come on home, boys. All right. So, unfortunately, Virgin, I kind of like what you're doing with some of your other titles, but I think Jenna Jameson's Shadow Hunter, from this panel of people, is an avoid.
Yep.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Cool. What's next on the list, Brian, this week?
I don't know. It's on the list. I've run out.
Oh, okay.
Are we going to do the topic?
Yeah, let's do the question of the week.
Oh, okay.
Quick.
Well, then we're jumping down to who would win in a fight? And this, we can go on and on and on about different things. But here's your people. Spider-Man in this corner. Batman in the darker corner. You can see his eyes glowing. So who is going to win in this battle? Rodrigo.
Well, I would give it to Batman because coming from the DC universe and having to contend with gods all the time, Batman has been elevated to basically the smartest creature in the universe. There's no one that is smarter than Batman, so he can find a way around super strength, web shooters, and super agility, and even a spider sense.
he'll figure out a way to use Spider-Man's spider sense against them. That's my end there.
All right, Steven. Okay.
I'm also going to go with Batman. I think that he's got the agility and the quickness and the gadgets that could beat anything that Peter Parker could throw at him or web-sling at him. I think the fight would be over before they left their corners. And I know that a lot of people aren't going to be happy with that, but that's just how I see it.
I'll make it 3 for 3. I think that, if anything, the way Batman is written is that his intellect wins out over everything else. So I think Spider-Man, you know, obviously has the physical attributes, but I think Batman is your winner.
I think if we put the bat-dickness meter into effect, Batman would turn it up to 9, and he'd get really tired of the smart wisecracks that Peter Parker would be throwing out and just take him down with a punch.
Yep. Which, and you can also see the two interact on majorspoilers.com if you see some random guys.
Those videos. Are great.
Those are hilarious. Great. Yep. Nicely done.
Cool. And we want to find out what you guys think about who would win in a fight between Spider-Man and Batman.
So go, and we've got a poll question up on the website, right, Steven?
That is right, or it will be up before this episode hits the podcast waves.
Then talk it out in the Major Spoilers Forum.
All right, our trade paperback this week is actually a little hardbound collection from Brian K. Vaughan called The Escapists. Essentially on his father's deathbed, teenager Maxwell Roth discovers that his father has had the largest collection of escapist memorabilia in the world hidden down in the basement all these years. He ends up spending weeks and years going through the collection, and Maxwell develops a real love, I think, for The Escapist, and also a really better understanding of who his father was. And so he essentially becomes obsessed with this character as his dad, and then when his mother passes away, Maxwell takes all the inheritance money that he's purchased and actually purchases the rights to The Escapist, and along with a couple of his friends that he meets or that we meet along the way, they try to revive The Escapist into a hero for the modern age. Let's see, where should we begin this week, Rodrigo? We had great kickoff with Jenna Jameson. Why don't we talk about The Escapists? And this is with an S.
Yes. Yeah, and that's because I imagine, you know, there's The Escapist, the character that these three other the three characters that are writing him and illustrating him are trying to revive, and they're also sort of trying to escape from their own sort of the ennui of their own lives or their own sadness. Really, you know, the main character's dad is dead, and all
right,
that
right.
Stuff. I read all the way through it and I liked it. It's not necessarily something that I would even buy, but, you know, I thought about it as, like, you know, if this was a movie and a friend had played it for me, I would have been like, oh, awesome. If, you know, a year later he's like, hey, do you want to watch The Escapist again? I'd be like, yeah, sure, sweet. Mm-hmm. And I think I've realized that this is a comic book romantic comedy.
It is.
It's, you know, it's about Max and his love interest, and The Escapist gets, and Denny.
Right.
They all kind of sort of get tangled in this battle with the...
With the big corporation
that's trying to take the property of The Escapist away from them. Meanwhile, you're sort of seeing what they're doing reflected on The Escapist. But I mean, it's a cute, funny, romantic comedy, and it has a little bit of weight to it, and it has, you know, superheroes and two different drawing styles. It's very complex, very cool, funny, romantic. I liked it.
I think you kind of sum up some of my thoughts right there. But what I find interesting is, The Escapist, the character, was created in a book called The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier in Clay, which in itself was a work of fiction about these two Jewish kids growing up and going through the trials and tribulation and creating this escapist character. And so this all happened in the 1930s. He was a Golden Age hero. Mm-hmm. And then we jump to, oh, I forget what year it was, 2002, somewhere around there. Dark Horse said, hey, let's pretend that this was a character from the Golden Age, and let's print a bunch of adventures and pretend that they're real. And then Brian K. Vaughan takes it a step further and says, okay, if we're playing in this real universe that's somewhat make-believe, right, what would happen if this property had fallen to the wayside and somebody wanted to come up and buy the copyright and the trademark of this character and start doing things? And I think that's, to me, is kind of the fascinating part. And to tell you the truth, I've got the book, The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier in Clay. I've never read it. I think I've read maybe the first chapter, and then life got in the way and it got set aside. Mm-hmm. I didn't even get to, you know, what they did with it. And I think that if someone read this book, you don't necessarily have to know anything about that backstory.
I didn't. No. I had no idea.
No.
And I think that's really cool. And then, you know, you really see, as you said, the title is kind of has that dual nature where not only is the escapist this character that they're trying to revive and trying to rescue, escape, if you will, from this bigger company, but they're also escaping themselves from, you know, Maxwell in order to make ends meet. He becomes a locksmith. And Denny Colt, who is the letterer of the comic, he works at his dad's sign factory, and he really doesn't like that, or his sign company. And the girl, let's see.
Case Weaver.
And I forget what she does. She does some graphic design art.
Yeah.
But this is something totally new and totally different for her. And so they're all escaping. And you're right, it is a love story. That's what it really is.
Yeah. Well, and to what kind of thing do you call this in the industry? I mean, if it's not purely based on superheroes and their exploits, is there any kind of a genre? Yeah, for this.
I think comic books as like really a very young medium, mm-hmm. as a medium, because you know they had comic strips in the old days. And everything. They're still sort of working to get your genre straight. I mean, you basically have superhero and non-superhero, and this book just falls between the cracks of the two.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I just this couldn't have been further from Jenna Jameson. In my opinion, I just really liked this.
Although, admit it, Brian, you'd like to get up next to Jenna Jameson.
I'm not saying she's an unattractive woman. I'm just saying that book was.
And this book has nothing to do with Jenna Jameson to begin with.
No, so that's all right. But I'm with you guys on this. The juxtaposition, big word, between the art of the stories and the comics is really good. You know, how the style is for basically the story.
And there were a lot of art. There were a lot of people working on the art in this. Yeah. In these, it was like a 6-issue miniseries.
Well, and one thing that I wrote down was that the art reminded me of the early 80s when Frank Miller was doing Daredevil. And I started flipping through trying to see if I could find if the artists were the same. But it's got that darkness, especially when the ninjas with the sewn mouths come out in this. They attack the lead character in the comic. They do evoke, for me, that kind of style of back when that was. But what I like a lot of it is the breaking of the fourth wall. The characters turn and talk, or actually Maxwell, who's the lead character, turns and talks. Some of the story is actually delivered from the escapist, who's the comic book and the pages of the comic book, but it's actually Maxwell talking to the reader. And I just thought it was really smart. I thought it had a lot of heart. I thought it was a really good story, and I would like to read escapist comic books based on what they were doing with the character. I thought that kind of stuff would be interesting.
It's sort of like the escapist as written by this fake character, essentially.
Because the stuff they came up with was interesting. Everything held my attention, and they never went for a big or easy shock, but what happens to Denny? When he gets arrested. I mean, it takes some turns that you don't expect, and it just I thought it comes off as a really well thought out, planned out, and paced everything that the other book wasn't that we've talked about today. This was well written, well paced, well thought out, had some heart, had something to say.
Well, and had some actual love, I think, of the story that was going on. I mean, from Brian K. Vaughan's standpoint, you know, he's really investing into this story, and you can tell he's spending the time to tell a story that's really good. And, you know, here we're talking, I think it's kind of an interesting look, not only from here are these people escaping, but, you know, a kind of a look at how the industry kind of works.
Here's this
property that, you know, a company, whoever it may be, has been holding on to it for years. And then suddenly someone comes in and buys it for a song. And then as an indie publisher trying to make a break and try to do something. And so the idea is Maxwell's dad had one of the original escapist costumes down in the basement from like maybe one of the serials from the early silent or the early talkie black and white films. And, you know, the talkies back then when things were brand new and sparkly. But, you know, then this idea was, well, let's do this little publicity stunt and try to rescue these people that are essentially at a Walmart locked in overnight, forced to work. And so we'll free these slaves. And it ends up happening as Denny walks in on this this holdup and he gets shot at. And then, of course, everybody gets arrested, and the publicity stunt, which is supposed to be something good, actually turns into something bad. It does generate some interest in the character, but in the bad side, or the bad thing about it, is it also generates interest in buying the property back from the big corporation, who eventually, unfortunately, as big corporations work, just turn the screw and stick it to the little guy.
Yeah.
and essentially steal the property back for very little money.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that I liked about this is there's not really the happy ending. In a sense there is, and there's a great ending. I mean, I think the ending is really great. I almost had started hoping that it was going to end with Case moved away and they lost the book. I just thought that was going to be bam, this is life, and that would be the end of it. It goes on a little bit, and I was worried that it would kind of sour the
meander.
But in the end, I think it really does do a good job at the end of bringing everything back together again too. So I just enjoyed this whole book, and I liked all the art. I thought the story was great.
The art, I think, was wonderful, especially when you jump between the art of Maxwell's world to the art of the comic that they're creating, to even going back and saying, okay, here's an adventure from the 1950s that we've recreated in that style.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when the company buys the escapist back and then they turn it all into a dream sequence, how that's even a different art style.
Yeah.
And it just, it's so wonderful and thought out. I mean...
Well, and the thing for me about the art, and do keep in mind that I went to film school, so I'm used to kind of like decomposing things like this.
Right.
The art within the book is way more realistic than the art in the real life of the book.
So, yes.
Like the characters that they're drawing, like the characters
the
in the book are drawing,
Lunamoth
are a lot more sort of photorealistic, which is sort of like, to them, the reality is the escapist, and they're sort of like trapped in this dream world outside that is a lot less clear cut. They have a lot less control over it. You kind of can't tell what's going on. And in the end, it kind of ends up, it's the real world that kind of gets away from them.
Yeah.
And by extension, the comic book is taken from them.
Ah, good point there, Mr. Movie Man. Mm-hmm. So let me ask a question then. If this were turned into a movie, or would you like to see this turned into a movie?
No, I don't think so, because I think the whole point Rodrigo was making, which is one of the parts that I loved about it, was the jump from this to that. And I just don't think you would carry it off in a movie. I think it would be difficult to do, and I think it would lose its impact. And I think, as we've seen in the past, when you translate something from print and some of the nice nuances of print and the things that they're trying to do, and you take it into the movie realm, you have to shorten things up, you have to tighten things up, you have to make things simple for people to follow who haven't got any background to this thing, and I think it would fall apart. I just don't see it as a viable movie. I think it's a great comic book, but I don't see it any other way.
I think the only way that you could do it, is if you could... you'd have to take the story and take away the comic book part and turn it into a film.
Right.
Like, we're reviving the old escapist film serials. Then it would be, you'd have to make it a movie about film.
Yeah.
Like, you'd have to take away the comic book aspect of it and make it an introspective film about film, go into the film industry and stuff like that. You could take
Be a good idea.
You could take the themes of the escapist and apply it to a movie. It would be hard to do the escapist as it is as a comic book into a movie.
And I'm sure Hollywood right now has just stolen your idea and typing away. I'm kind of, I look at this as kind of like, take a really good slacker film. What was that one with the Lego? Copeland wrote it, remember, back when we were in the early 90s? I forget what the name of it is, but it was talking about the small software company. You're the one that passed.
Microsurfs.
Yeah, Microsurfs.
Yeah, that was
That's kind of how I see this book. This comic book is kind of like Microsurfs, and I would really, if it were translated into film, it would be kind of a slackerish type movie, but actually a good slacker movie, not like High Times or what's that awful one with Dane Cook and Jessica Simpson in it, that kind of stuff.
Employee of the Month.
How do you know that?
I watch a lot of TV.
Oh, good Lord. I actually saw the movie too. So. Only because it had Jessica Simpson in it.
Yeah.
But, I think it could be done. I think it could be a very good film if it were a very small personal film. But once you start to get the big industry in it and you start getting stars thrown in there left and right in a lot of these character positions, I think that's where it would fall apart.
If you started getting a lot of stars and they were like, we need to make the lawyer's part bigger because she's played by, Nicole Kidman. Then it's there goes the story.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe not a good movie, but certainly a very good read. This actually is a very cheap buy, under $10. You can go to Amazon.com and find this for under $10. And
that's
think it's I think everybody should pick it up. Or what I wanted to say last week, Brian, is are we done with The Escapist? Any other thoughts on The Escapist?
No, I think that's
okay. I think we're good.
One of the things you had mentioned last week is going to your local library and looking for a lot of these. And if you don't find the books that are on the shelf, ask the librarian to order them.
Yeah, request them.
I've been told time and time again that librarians are looking for books to put on the shelves and looking for new purchases.
Yep.
And so if you go in with a list of, hey, here are some good books that I think you should get on the shelf, you'll want to get trade paperbacks, you'll want to get collected issues, people will read them. And I think the librarians are interested in that because it's whatever will bring people into the library.
Yeah, and I know the library in my town is the same way. You can send in a request, and more times than not, they're going to go ahead and buy that because they know somebody is going to come and pick that book up off the shelf where they've got shelves of books that nobody touches anymore. So it's better to rotate those off, put something on that brings people in. And that's a good active library is a good place. And actually, I think the Adventures of Cavalier and Clay popped up when I did a search at the library for, you know, different things and
right.
topics. And so this book has made me interested in reading that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Brian K. Vaughan, did he have anything to do with
Runaways. He wrote it.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And we're not trying to create a theme here.
This
that
is the Brian K. Vaughan fan club.
But
I love Brian
K. Vaughan. We like you so much.
We love anything with Brian K. If
Yeah, whatever.
Except he's misspelling his first name, but that's okay.
All right. So here's my charge to you, Brian. Go to your library and ask them to put The Escapists on the shelf.
Okay.
All right. Cool.
We'll see. A lot of times there's stuff there, and, you know, judging a book by its cover, there's a lot of stuff that's sitting there, and you guys look at art and say, ooh, I want to read that because of the art. Sometimes I look at the art and think, ugh, that's ugly. I'm not going to read it. And it turns out that you're missing a good story. There's a lot of art, and it's I think it's the new way they're doing Spider-Man. It's Ultimates, right?
Ultimate Spider-Man.
I just don't care for that look. It just colors the way I think of the book. It might be great stories. I just don't care for that style for some reason.
I think a lot of people love the the iconography of, for example, Watchmen. Mm-hmm. But growing up, I kept seeing the trade paperback for Watchmen, opened it up, and I didn't like the way it was colored and the way it was drawn. So I never picked it up until finally a friend beat me over the head and said, "You got to read Watchmen."
Yeah, and I think sometimes if you give it a chance, even if it has bad art or what you perceive as bad art, I think if you give it a chance, it kind of grows on you. And I certainly found that was the same way with Watchmen. I found it with The Escapists, to a lesser extent, maybe with Jenna Jameson's Shadowhunter.
I don't want anything from that book to grow on me.
Well, and I think one thing you could do, and I've always thought this, people who are in the know, and listeners can do this, certainly go to the forums, start helping to build a list of the essentials. You know, if you want to know what's going on, you should at least have read Watchmen, things like that. And just to help people like me, like I said, I've only read certain things. I've read things people have handed off to me. But you could start talking about those kind of things.
All right, great. Well, I think that about wraps it up for this episode.
I think so. Thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to tell your friends about the show and be sure to visit our website at majorspoilers.com. Feel free to drop us an email at podcast@majorspoilers.com. And be sure to get involved in the Major Spoilers Forum. You can find a link on the front page of the Major Spoilers site. Next week, we'll be reviewing a couple titles from Boom Studios.
Boom.
Boom. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel.